The scripture reading this morning is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. And in some ways, I don't know if we really need to read this because Malia gave such a nice story about it as well, but I will do so. On the road to Emmaus. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tombs and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what had been said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Here ends the reading.
Aloha. I am the Reverend Jaquan Beecham, and I offer my alohas with ho'ihi and kuleana. I'm delighted to be here to offer this reflection to you. It's already been incredible, the warm embrace that I've received, and the connections that I've found from Georgia and even Yale, those that I did not travel with, has been pretty incredible. And so I offer those who are here in the church house in person and also those who are on the Zoom just alohas of love. So I think that my job has been made a bit easy since Pastor Malia and Hito have read the story in full. So I'll just kind of take my seat and I'll leave you with the question of what happens when eavesdropping goes right? But on a more serious note, I serve at Andover Newton Seminary at Yale Divinity School as the Director of Community Development and Spiritual Formation. And I'm so grateful to be flanked here and supported here by a group of my colleagues and stakeholders as we are trying to do a new thing, like Isaiah said, while being mindful of the folks who have come before us. So before I dive into the text this morning, I just want to uplift that it is really incredible to be here at Crossroads, ahead of your centennial when I learned the history of this church was one of the youth, one that sought to go beyond division. And I think that this Lucan gospel is inviting us to a very similar work. Will you join me in a posture of prayer? I will cast all my cares upon you. I will lay all of my burdens down at your feet. And any time I don't know what to do, I will cast all my cares upon you. Now, Holy One, may I become small and you large, and let the words of your wisdom and your way be heard. Amen. I'd like to speak to you from a message that is entitled, What Things? Colon, the Aloha Way. What things? So it is here that we meet our disciples. Pastor Malia asked earlier, who's in the story? We know that Cleopas is in the story. It is said that perhaps his wife Mary is also journeying with him. And then this mysterious for some time character eavesdrops on their conversation and enters the scene, the stage right. This story is typically told after Easter in the time of Ascension. This Lucan gospel passage is quite theologically in between resurrection and ascension. So the Savior has been killed, has not yet risen. So we're in this liminal space, right? We're in this time of perhaps grief and doubt, despair, asking where does hope lie? Our passage says that they are discussing the things that happen, the things of the day, perhaps the election results were a part of their conversation. Perhaps the new COVID gathering guidelines were a part of their conversation. And the passage reminds us that their eyes were kept from seeing him. Now that can be read in a number of ways. And I think sometimes the first or initial one is one of how dare God hide himself from them? Why would God play a trick on the disciples that are already in a low place? But I wonder if we could take a moment, a step back to zoom out, if you will, if maybe their eyes being kept from seeing was a reality of that sometimes grief, sometimes doubt can blur our vision. Sometimes the things that we did not expect to see can blind us or disturb our vision along the way. We are told in this story that the disciples did not expect to see God. And perhaps that was maybe the first mistake in the mix. And I pose to you, what would it look like if we were to move differently? What would it look like if we were expecting God in every action that we partook in? If we expected God to show up in every space that we entered into, with every word that we said, with every breath that we uttered. A colleague of mine recently described my preaching style as eschatological, or using imagination, pointing us towards a place that is not yet seen, not yet our reality, but very much possible. I think that this Road to Emmaus story is actually encouraging a similar sort of vision. It is one of hope. And hope is a practice, it is a discipline, a practice of manaoio, a trust in something which cannot be proven perhaps, a practice of a faith that Hebrew tells us is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. So this hope, as we are in between Jerusalem and Emmaus, maybe encouraging us to affirm any and all that we encounter on the road. This hope, I believe, makes room to call folks in, to hold some accountability. It encourages us to check in on one another as Jesus did in this story. It allows even maybe for some forgiveness. Maybe the disciples were kind of disturbed by this interruption. And I think that most importantly, this passage of hope paves a way to the peaceable kingdom. It paves the way for new dreams and vision amidst the death of something hoped for. So again, hope is a discipline, it is a practice, and it is active. And I will not lie to you, there is a bittersweetness to hope sometimes, because it can seem that it is oftentimes easier to succumb by the circumstances that are around us. And the path to hope is not always clearly laid out. So I point back to or emphasize the second inquiry of Jesus in this text. Jesus asks, what things? I invite you to turn to someone near you and say, what things? In this narrative passage, this question could be seen as ludicrous, as you, with the assumption that you already know what things, or how could you not have known? And I think that this question of what things is an invitation to vulnerability. I think that it is an invitation to take real stock of what's going on, to not rush to any kind of closure and clarity, to not move with making any assumptions. The disciples were on their way to Emmaus. However, if they would not have engaged in the conversation, they may not have been able to get the true value of what Jesus, therefore God, was saying to them. It is a different trajectory if you are moving through time and space in the present as opposed to destination-oriented. So Jesus asks, what things? What things I would also uplift, and perhaps someone would affirm, is a trauma-informed way of doing ministry. It is coming in without assumptions and putting the people who are in the reality first. It is a person-first inquiry. Because if you think about it, if we believe that Jesus is fully God and fully human, why would God ask us any questions at all? But in this story, at a time such as this, Jesus insists to know what things are you going through right now? What things may be holding you down, keeping you bound? Or what things are encouraging you to continue moving on this journey? To truly ask a question such as this, instead of our routine, how are you doings, is an invitation to humility. In this story, Jesus, by example, humbles himself to those who are going through a time of crisis. This humility allows for kupono, or truth, to be shared. While I've been here on Oahu, I've learned the term talk story. And it seems as though talking story is another way of checking in, another way of doing ministry, another way of being trauma-informed and person-first in your travels. For it is in the talking of story that we form relationship, that we deepen in community, that we actually do life with one another instead of apart or adjacent to. And the humanity of relationality slows us down, very much for me with the Hawaiian language. I love it because I can't rush through it, either because of lack of knowledge of the enunciation or an akina. And so I encourage you to take your time and actually in your speech and in your practices as you try to build relationship as Jesus is calling us to in this story. I think that Jesus is also giving us a model of compassionate relationship, or loko maikae, or loko maikae, compassion. Jesus displays a real desire to journey with us through our suffering. Jesus does not belittle or dilute the situation, but inquires with compassion, which I think is another clue or offering to the blueprint of building the kingdom in liminal spaces, And I think that many of us, if not all of us, can say that we know what it is like to live in a liminal reality. And so now, as we think about where we have come from to where we are going, you may be thinking, now, Kahu Chikwan, how am I supposed to offer a word of compassion or encouragement when I may feel like I am traveling on this road on my own? Or when I am traveling on this road and with to-dos and checklists and things that are busying me, asking perhaps me as well, like, what if I don't have the time or the luxury to travel across the nation in order to build relationship? I'm glad that you asked. On this road between what I would say hopelessness and hope, between Jerusalem and Emmaus, there is a time and space for grievances. There is a time to exclaim, we had hoped. And I'm curious if there are things that come to mind for you now of what you had hoped for, but it went another way. Maybe the election did not turn out the way that you had hoped. Maybe the diagnoses did not come out, results did not come out the way you had hoped. Maybe you had hoped that the impact of the missionaries would have been all good across the board. Maybe you had hoped that sovereignty would have lasted a bit longer. Maybe you would have hoped that you were more in touch with your indigeneity or where you come from. We had hoped, we had hoped, we had hoped. Now again, the road to hope oftentimes is a muddy and murky one. Often one that is not a red carpet, but one that has some obstacles to traverse. And as we are on our way from context of as we had hoped to, what, why or weren't our hearts burning, I invite you to remember your alohas. And please forgive me in advance because I will offer to you an acronym. However, there is a double A at the beginning and at the end as we remember our alohas. So I invite you at this time to take a deep breath in with me and to release it. And the first A in our alohas is ancestry. And I invite you to maybe invite into this space someone whose shoulders you are perhaps standing on. I invited my great-grandfather, who I have one photograph with him at less than a year old, who was an itinerant preacher. It is our ancestors or our clouds of witnesses who surround us, even in our present moment, along the road's journey. I also invite the words of Queen Liliuokalani, Onipa'a, may you stand firm with as you move with your clouds of witnesses. The second A is Ahonui. May you move with patience and confidence as you journey on the road. May you have found community that you can ask what things to as you are on the Emmaus Road. And then Lau Lima. May you on the road find communities to collaborate with. May you be able to feel that in your call and in your mission that there is a mutuality and a benefit, that there is room for your voice alongside others. And then the O, Alakimo Maika'i. You cannot forget to take care of yourself holistically, mind, body, and spirit. Whatever that may look like, if it's quiet time with the sacred text, if it's a walk along the beach, if it is the reading of your favorite poem, and if it is the breaking of the bread, you know, having dinner with someone as you journey on the road. I offer the H, one that I offered in this space already, of ho'ihi. May we never forget the dignity of those that we encounter on the road. May we never place one above another as we journey. And may we offer them the same respect and kindness that we hope to receive. And in that same note, may we see ourselves as beloved with the respect that has been imbued by us at the creation by God. And then the first of the second pair of A's is to remember your aloha, your love, and your friendship. May you remember that God is as close to you as your breath, even when you may feel like you are out of breath and exacerbated, that God is still there. And I close with the second A, the Aloha Aina, the reminder of the spaces in which we have the privilege to inhabit. I acknowledge now the gratitude that I have that we are sharing time and space right now, and that to acknowledge that we will never gather in this same configuration ever again, and that is holy. And I also uplift the environments that surround us in this beautiful sanctuary, from the sun and the clouds to the trees that surround us, and even the animal creatures that scurry about. I believe that these values, ones that I've learned anew in a different language, are the ingredients or each of the courses for communion. And for me, I tend to be a bit of a fast eater. And so growing up, my grandfather oftentimes reminded me, just take my time and slow down. And so I encourage you that as you are on your journey, that you enjoy each course of the Aloha with dignity and love. And that perhaps the question of what things might be food for thought, something to feast on together. In closing, I uplift that this gospel passage serves as a reminder that life can indeed, does come after death, and that we can make it back to the communion table or the meeting house to ask the real questions. And I think that this gospel encourages and compels us to remain open to what God is doing, and remain open to each thing, each creature, each human that we encounter on the road. Even if it might be a Baptist minister who is trying to figure out how to preach gender with gender fluidity, when we have a sacred text that can be interpreted to give misogynistic permissions, or maybe it is chewing on the food for thought of a young one, a native who sees over the horizon the blueprint for restoration and is taking her own journey to be able to encourage this new life and reconciliation. Or maybe it's on a fellow traveler on a flight or a bus who doesn't quite speak your language as clearly, but can communicate just as clearly when talking about the meaning of life, and that is love. This was a sharing that I encountered on my way here. An elder Filipino woman who did not speak much English until she, I don't think she knew it, but prophesied the love of God on me. And it was the fact that any kind of language barrier fell away when love was the intention. And so I encourage you that no matter where life may lead you, that the hosting spirit does go with you, and that even with the greetings, whether it is a greeting or a see you later, that as long as we have breath, that we have ha, we can build hales on our ways to our hallelujahs. And I will sit down, I promise, this time with one more narrative. This morning I was able to say see you later to the Pacific Ocean. One of my practices that I found while here was to rise up before the sun, or try to, and just have some time in the water. And I've noticed that, you know, maybe our Pacific Ocean would take heed to the pastoral care class, because she's not always the best at letting you go. But I found that no matter how you enter, she's ready to radically welcome you. And so I encourage you to move with that same embrace and practice of love and care. Aloha and mahalo. May it be so.